Welcome to the Uncontested Podcast, talking Oklahoma City Thunder basketball and the wider NBA.
Sam Presti said, lower the hatch, load up the cannon, and get the tank out rolling.
Catch new episodes after each Thunder game and every Sunday night.
This is a house of learning doctors.
Follow the Uncontested on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to catch new content as it drops.
I mean, a cat and a dog connected together?
This is Lou Dort. You're listening to the Uncontested.
What is up, and welcome to the Uncontested Podcast. Little bonus episode for you guys today. If you've listened to our Sunday night slash Monday morning episode, you would have heard this. But with the season officially being over, we're changing our podcast schedule up just a bit. We still have the typical Sunday night, 9 p.m. Central Time live stream on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Then throughout the week, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we will be live on the Locker Room app, hanging out, taking questions. Our Wednesday night Locker Room is actually going to be about a 45-minute to an hour-long actual podcast show. So that'll be fun for you guys to join if you're interested. But tonight, Monday night, Nick Crane went on the Locker Room app, talked a little bit about Thunder exit interviews from today, draft prospects, tiebreakers, the lottery, all that good stuff. The Clippers win, as he was not on the Sunday night episode to break that stuff down with us. So I wanted to throw you guys a little bonus pod today. It's only about 30 minutes or so of Nick on the Locker Room app taking questions. So hope you guys enjoy it. Make sure to follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and join us Wednesday night on the Locker Room app as we start our player grade series. Should be a blast. So we will talk to you guys then and enjoy the episode.
All right, we'll kick things off. Cameron has a pretty good question here in the chat. Any major highlights from exit interviews? So kind of surprisingly, obviously season ended last night with the Thunder getting a W over the Clippers. I'm sure we'll talk quite a bit about that over the next 30 minutes or so. Kind of a big deal as they shift from a share of the third best odds to a share of the fourth best odds. Exit interviews were less than 12 hours later, typically. Obviously the Thunder in the playoffs, but there's usually, I feel like, a day or two between the season actually ending and then exit interviews, albeit historically in the past, exit interviews had been in person. So it kind of makes sense to give people a couple of days to plan accordingly to make it up to the peak for those exit interviews. But this year it was immediately after. They started at 9 a.m. this morning. We kind of thought it was going to go quick, rapid fire, 10, 15 minutes per player, multiply that by, 16, the 15 guys plus Mark. Figured it would just be a couple hour ordeal. And ultimately, I think Charlie Brown was one of the last guys. He was going around 5:30. So, I mean, it was a full day ordeal. I was popping in and out, listening to some of the avails. I would say the overall theme, just to get back to Cameron's questions, or the major highlights, just continued kind of praise for the front office. I feel like even the guys that didn't play a whole lot or didn't have huge roles or only spent a couple seasons with the team, had great things to say. Everything from Tony Bradley, who's only been with the team since the trade deadline, had talked about, his first impression with Mark Daigneault, kind of went back and told a story that the first time he had talked to him, he was just shocked with how much Daigneault actually knew about him as a person, as a player, what kind of game he had. So clearly Mark had been watching film and getting familiar with his new big man. And for him, that just meant a lot, especially a guy like Tony Bradley. I don't know if you guys recall last summer, he bounced around a lot. I think he was traded twice or three times in a 48-hour period. It was traded as part of a larger deal, and then he was ultimately flipped for another second-round pick. So just hopping around throughout his career, has never had real consistent minutes, especially with the Sixers this year, with them being a playoff team, obviously secured that number one spot. He was behind both Embiid and Dwight Howard. So he was the third string center. Although he was a backup in Oklahoma City and had a few DNPs down the stretch, it was just something that, he praised the team for the opportunity that he got. he felt that, and this is for a lot of guys just going along the line of themes, the way that the coaching staff and the front office trusted guys to really do whatever they wanted to, you know. Isaiah Roby talked a lot about this, just being allowed to run the point center position, you know, be a ball handler, do things that he historically hasn't been able to do in the NBA to grow as a player and just kind of see what he can do. Tony Bradley had similar comments, you know, not only did he get an opportunity to play, but he felt that the coaching staff gave him the ability to really show what he's good at. And he talked about his passing ability and his ability to dribble the ball, you know, make decisions, be an actual playmaker in the post. And so that was one example of players kind of talking through positive things in relation to the team. Mike Muscala was another one that, you know, obviously got super emotional. He was asked essentially, you know, you had the chance to be traded to a contender and go play for a playoff team and use your 3-point shooting ability and your size to go help a team, maybe win a championship, but you sort of indicated to the front office that Oklahoma City is where you wanted to be. And they were, and even before this said they were transparent and said that, hey, after the trade deadline, if you stick around, your role is going to be very, very limited. He kept saying, they told him, you know, be ready to play. But the second half of the season was really going to be allowing young guys to get minutes. And, you know, with Shea out, with Al Horford out around that same time, I think they just predicted, like, let's let these young guys get some burn, see what kind of talent we have. And Mike, just being transparent, you're not going to play much, if at all, in a lot of these games. And Mike was still willing to stick around on the team. He said he really just wanted to find a way to impact the locker room, even if he's not on the court playing. And he got emotional, was tearing up. He said, you know, since I've been in Oklahoma City, just the vision and the way the front office operates and their values just align with his. And it's almost been a life-changing opportunity. And it's interesting because he wasn't like a scrub. He wasn't a no-name kind of guy before coming to Oklahoma City. I'll touch on Kendrick Williams here in a second, who is a guy that Oklahoma City really turned his career around. But Mike Muscala was a guy that had played for several quality teams before coming to Oklahoma City and had a real role. And, you know, with all that said, he was just still so excited to be part of this team and said, you know, 100%, I want to be back next year. I don't know if it's in the cards, but if they give me the opportunity, I'd love to. I mentioned Kendrick Williams, talked about how the front office gave him the ability to really be himself this year. And he felt like he was more natural on the floor, able to do different things, play multiple positions. Poku said similar things. You know, it's not the first time he's played point guard or kind of a guard position in general. He's done that for a good portion of his younger career, but this is the first chance in the NBA late in the season he's had that opportunity. And that was an overall theme. Everyone was very, very complimentary of the front office, the coaching staff, the flexibility, the trust they instilled in all of these players. And, you know, that's positive. Oklahoma City's not a huge free agency destination. So anytime you hear things like this, guys talk all the time. It's almost every single time the Thunder acquire a player, you know, they obviously have their press conference with the media shortly after. And one of the first questions they're always asked is, you know, what's the perception of Oklahoma City from an outsider point of view? And almost every person says, oh yeah, I'm actually already close with so-and-so, or I played with so-and-so in the past and had this relationship with them, texted them when I got traded, just kind of asking about Oklahoma City. And it's always positive. And of course they have a great first impression once they actually come to the team. And, you know, for free agency, I mean, obviously over the last 12 years, this team's been around, haven't been a huge free agency destination, but if they can land a couple huge names in the draft and keep Shai Gilgeous-Alexander around and they look like a young, exciting team that others around the league want to play for, maybe that flips and maybe these small markets start having a little bit better success. And so, that was one of the main overall themes. Clay had a question, kind of a follow-up on Mike getting emotional. He asked, is that a guy who's going to stay around? Like I said, Mike was asked that directly. Like, you stuck it out this year and wanted to stay in Oklahoma City at the trade deadline. Do you see yourself here next year? And he said, 100%, if they give me the opportunity, I would love to be back here in OKC. And I don't know if that's something that the Thunder will entertain. Obviously, he's played the last couple of seasons on a veteran minimum, so it's not like the Thunder wouldn't keep him around for the money. I think it truly comes down to a roster spot. They're going to have four picks in the top 35 this year. Obviously, those first round picks are very variable. It could be picks 1 and 5. It could be picks 7 and 18. But they're going to have two first rounders, and they're going to have two picks in the top 5 of the second round as well. That Golden State Warriors pick did not convey. They didn't finish in the top 10 of the league. And so that turns into the Minnesota second rounder that they have. And that pick will be, I believe, 34, 35, and Oklahoma City's will be, I'm sorry, theirs will be 36, and Oklahoma City's will be 34. I need to double check on that. But essentially, four picks in the top 35 or 36. If their draft luck is anything like it's been with Théo Maledon, obviously you can get some quality guys early in the second round. And so if you're really planning on using all four of your draft picks and not packaging those or making any moves with those picks, I mean, that's four roster spots that are going to be filled by those rookies. And there's only a handful of guys that are going to be going into free agency. You've got Svi, who's entering restricted free agency. You've got Tony Bradley, who's entering restricted free agency, and a couple other names as well. Even guys like Josh Hall, do you bring him back on a two-way deal or do you try to sign him to a full contract? They just signed Charlie Brown Jr. Obviously, Charlie Brown, as well as Gabriel Deck, are on sort of non-guaranteed deals. Like, if you really had to cut one of those guys, it wouldn't hurt your cap space. And Kiwi in the chat also said Denver second round. Yeah, there's definitely some other picks as well. I was just kind of referring to what feel like locks, right? There's always those second round guys that like Devin Hall and Kevin Hervey, guys in the past later in the second round, don't always make the team. They almost feel like they're drafted for developmental purposes to play for the Blue, which will be fun to watch next year. But it really does feel like there's going to be four guys in the draft that will be signed to full-time NBA contracts. Silver, another good point. There's Micić, the guy that they got in that trade with the Sixers over the offseason. That's another guy that's been rumored to already be in talks with the Thunder to sign a deal and come play, similar to Gabriel Deck. All that to say, you know, that's a lot of rambling, but there's not going to be a ton of open roster spots. And if Mike Muscala wants to come back, I think obviously it makes sense for him to. If Al Horford is traded, here's another thing. Al Horford's got a huge contract. It's likely not going to be a one-to-one trade. If you take two or three guys back and Al Horford, obviously you can do some waving and some cutting, but at the end of the day, roster spots are going to be hard to come by. And Mike Muscala would be a great veteran. I think he'd be the only guy over the age of 30 on the team after Al Horford is traded next season, turning 30 years old. But and you've got to have that veteran. But at the end of the day, if Sam Presti's objective is to, you know, sign just a bunch of young guys and give them more burn, you never know. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with where these picks fall, right? If it's picks 7 and 18, I think the Thunder have a similar season next year where they run a bunch of young talent, they don't do too well, and they look to draft their franchise-changing guy the next summer. But if they get, like, picks 1 and 5, there was a mock draft and a couple of sims recently that have Thunder at 1 and 5. If they got, like, a Cade Cunningham and a Jonathan Kuminga to go along with SGA and Dort and Baze, like, that might change things too. Maybe the Thunder try to be more competitive next year and fight for a play-in spot if they do that format again. Maybe they think they can gun for the 10 seed and the rebuild's expedited. So I think this draft is pivotal. But a lot to say, Mike Muscala, not sure if we'll see him around next year, although I think both sides would like to. There's just a lot of logistical things to work out. Cameron has a question in the chat. Should the Thunder trade some of their picks this draft since I believe they have 5 or so? And it's unlikely they have so many roster spots next year. I'll invite you on stage if you want to talk through this as well, Cameron. But I think again, it depends on where the picks fall. If you get 1 and 5, maybe you're comfortable selecting all the way through with the way things are now. If you get something outside the top 5, maybe you don't even land a top 5 pick. Maybe you try to package those early second rounders with maybe Miami's pick and try to move up a little bit. I don't know. It's a question of where those lottery picks fall and, you know, how that works out for them. What do you think, Cameron?
Yeah, I think absolutely the Thunder should trade some of their picks. I think especially if Sam Presti really believes in a guy maybe at like the start of the second round and he won't be there at the end of the second round, if you put together some of those second round picks, I think that definitely could be something they could explore. I remember last year with Vit Krejci, Sam Presti obviously traded up and got him from the Wizards. So I think if they do something similar to that, that could be definitely.
Yeah, Vit's another guy I hadn't even mentioned. That's another name that has also been rumored to be signing a deal in Oklahoma City. It's another name, and things just keep getting more and more kind of convoluted on who's going to be on this roster next season. My follow-up question for you, if Oklahoma City does indeed trade some of their picks, would you rather it be to move up in the draft, or would it be maybe some sort of sign-and-trade, or maybe a team like the Lakers or another contender has a young guy? I know Talen Horton Tucker's due for an extension, but similar situation where they have a young guy, but would rather use a draft pick on somebody else for a cheap contract to avoid re-signing a guy and just getting another body in there. A lot of these contenders are going to be a crunch on cap space. Would you prefer to trade for a guy that's already in the league or use some of those picks to conglomerate?
That's an interesting question. And I think it really depends where the Thunder kind of land in the draft. So I think if they land with one of those ideal scenarios with like a top five or two top five picks, and they're really going to start trying to build for the next couple of years, then I think absolutely you go trade for a guy like Talen Horton Tucker, or really just any other guys in the league, because with them you're getting a, you know, guaranteed talent who's actually going to be able to contribute to your team in a couple of years, because I know Talen Horton Tucker brings just incredible talent on both ends of the floor, especially on defense, and I think that would be a great guy for us to get. But yeah, just players like him, I think they'll be ready to contribute in a year or two compared to maybe some of those late first round picks or early second round picks really won't be able to contribute early on. So I think it really depends where the Thunder land in the lottery. I think if they're ready to start contending in a year or two, I think you go and trade for a guy. But if you want to start getting your stars in a couple of years, then I think you stick with those draft picks and just go for the cheaper guys, I guess.
Most definitely. And I want to talk a little bit about the news that dropped today regarding the coin flip for that 4-5 tiebreaker. It's interesting because in years past, they've done a full-on, almost like mini lottery show. Like the year the Pelicans got Zion, they were actually in a three-way tie with the Mavs and someone else. I want to say the Kings maybe for the seventh best odds. And they did a full-on lottery show for that tiebreaker and several others. And we hadn't really heard how they were going to do tiebreakers this year. And Jonathan Givony of ESPN, he's the former Draft Express guy, really, really, really knows his prospects. If you want any sort of draft coverage, obviously outside of the Uncontested, I highly recommend looking at his stuff. But he broke today that it's going to be a coin flip. I don't know how big this is going to be televised. It's going to be sort of middle of the day, he said. So I don't know if ESPN will pick it up or if it'll be like a series on the Jump. If you guys have heard anything on that, I'd be interested to hear it. But essentially, if Oklahoma City wins the flip, they get four. If they lose the flip, they get five. And that does have pretty significant implications on their picks, because if they land at four, the worst pick they could get is eight. And even then, it's like a 2.4% chance. And so you'd really be looking at something like, you know, one through seven. Whereas if they land at five, they have a small chance at nine, a higher chance at eight. And it really kind of pushes their floor back a little bit. Not to mention when it comes to the number one pick odds, it's only like a 2 or 3% swing, but your chances at K do decrease a little bit. So that win against the Clippers, I don't think it's going to come back to necessarily bite the Thunder in the butt. At the end of the day, like, they could have tied for third and still gotten the fourth best odds and lost that tiebreaker. This final. But nonetheless, I mean, it's a pretty big deal when it comes to the floor for me, like the fact that you could get the ninth pick theoretically. It's also interesting. Vegas is so good at calculating win totals in the season. If you went back and looked at the start of the season, the Thunder were projected 22.5 wins. They finished at 20. Someone like the Washington Wizards, they were projected at 33.5. They finished at 34. Like it is wild how accurate Vegas is on a lot of these things. But all that to say, this team had 19 wins at the trade deadline, finished with 22. I'd be curious your guys' thoughts. Like, outside of just playing the young guys more, obviously you don't have Al, you don't have Shea. Like, what was the biggest difference in the second half of the season for you? Like, what was the biggest thing that really turned the season around, theoretically in a negative way, but really in a positive way for the draft?
Yeah, so I think it's just really just general veteran presence on the team. During the, like, the exit interviews, there was, like, that one moment, and then Kenrich Williams commented about it later, and he's like, you know, I'm kind of older than most of the guys, and I know Kenrich Williams is only 26 years old. So he was basically acting as that veteran presence, kind of based on what I know. And really, guys like Al Horford, Mike Muscala, although they were there, they weren't really out there on the court. So I think just general lack of veteran presence, that's kind of what led to the Thunder. Because even head coach Mark Daigneault, he's a pretty young guy as well. So I just think just general overall experience just led to the Thunder losing games, because pretty much every night you're going to go against multiple veterans, multiple stars on most teams, especially when you're playing playoff teams. So I think just not having a veteran or multiple veterans just really hurt them as far as winning, but did help them with the draft.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like basketball, not even NBA. Basketball is a game of runs. A lot of being a great team is being able to stop a run and swing momentum back in your favor. I mean, I don't care who you are. If you allow an 18-2 run in any sort of game, like, there's a good chance you're going to lose. And the great teams don't let that happen. They have veterans that say, this is stopping now. Listen, guys, we're getting a stop on defense. We are scoring a bucket on offense. And they flip the script, right? In Oklahoma City, with them rolling out, I mean, they had nights where their average lineup age was, you know, just over 20 years old. I mean, they were playing multiple 19-year-olds. Like last night against the Clippers, it was all these young guys / two-way guys / guys that were on 10-day contracts just weeks before. And it's tough. I mean, this is some of their first real NBA run. And when you're playing against a team like the Clippers, although they ended up with a win and they were playing the Clippers B and C team, like, it wouldn't have been shocking if they're at the end of the game, they would have ultimately lost, just because it's hard to win down the stretch. And on the flip side of that, it's hard to flip a run when you're on the backside of it, but it's also hard to get on a run and keep that momentum whenever you're such a young team. And Silver in the chat, some of the starting lineups were younger than the college starting lineups. And that's true. A lot of those teams, even like in the NCAA tournament, a lot of these teams that were playing really, really well had average ages of, you know, 21, 22, sometimes 23 years old. And Oklahoma City was rolling out much younger lineups. And I think that brings us to an interesting point that, you know, with Alexei Pokuševski. And a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads when Oklahoma City traded up to take him at 17. Obviously, he was a huge boom or bust guy. When you're 7 foot or 7'1", whatever he's listed at, and you can shoot the ball and you can handle, it's intriguing. But at the same time, he was kind of playing in the B league of his overseas team over there in Greece, and it was a risky pick. And at the end of the day, I think Sam Presti had the mindset of, look, this guy is going to be younger than a lot of the guys in the 2021 class. You look at most of the guys going in the lottery, Poku's younger than. And I would argue if Pokuševski, with what teams have seen from him, was in this upcoming draft, I think he goes top 7 or 8, no question. And I think you could argue he goes top 5. I don't know if you take him over Kuminga. That would be the one guy that you might, just because he's also kind of a boomer bust guy. He's got the frame. He's pretty raw. Cameron, I don't know about you or anyone in the chat that wants to pipe up or anyone that wants to join us on stage here, but if Poku was in the 2021 NBA draft, where do you go?
I would say he goes top 8, probably. I still think he goes behind the top 5 guys, just because I know Kuminga brings a lot of value, just kind of on both ends of the floor. And he's just, he like Poku, like you said, he's just a very raw prospect. But I think he brings value on defense, which is just something Poku doesn't bring. And then Poku, I think Scotty Barnes at 6, I think Poku still goes behind him, just because Scotty Barnes is probably the best defender in this class. And much like Kuminga and many of the other guys in the top 5, I think Scotty Barnes. I think Scotty Barnes, just because of his defensive value, and then he also has offensive upside, I think he also goes over Poku. But I think after that, I think Poku probably goes 7 then, just after those 6 guys, just because they're better on defense. And obviously Poku has not been able to prove himself on defense, at least of yet. And then obviously overseas, he wasn't.
Yeah, I think Poku has the defensive ability. I mean, when you're that big and you move the way he does, like there is a clear high ceiling on that end of the floor. He's proven to be a shot blocker. I think he broke the Thunder rookie record with 6 blocks, I want to say. So he's definitely got the potential. It just, does it come around? And absolutely, offensively, obviously, he's got the range. You bring up a prospect that I'm super high on. I think he is probably the consensus 6th best player. Like if you're, I know most mock drafts have Keon out of Tennessee going 6th overall. I think Scotty Barnes is the clear number 6 for some of the reasons you mentioned. He is, outside of Evan Mobley and maybe outside of Cade from a potential standpoint, because Cade is just a humongous point guard, I think he's got defensive player of the year written all over him. His defense literally has him as a top 10 player. He's a very subpar shooter. His offense did not come together like people thought it would his freshman year at Florida State before declaring. Like, he is a top 10 prospect solely on his defense, his switchability. He's 6'9". He's that jumbo forward, that Jason Tatum type. You know, I can play the 3, I can play the 4, I can hopefully stretch the floor one day offensively. But from a defensive standpoint, like, he is a bulldog. And as, like, kind of unsexy as this sounds, because everyone wants the flashy score, the Jalen Green that's an instant 15, 20 points a game as a rookie. He reminds me a lot of Anthony Edwards, speaking of Jalen Green. But going back to Scotty Barnes, can you imagine a lineup where you have SGA, who clearly has a ton of defensive upside, you've got Lu Dort, and you've got Scotty Barnes as your 1-2-3? Oh, like, that's a lineup that's hard to score.
Yeah, that's unreal. I think if the Thunder gets Scotty Barnes, really just the only position they have to address is the center position. And if Bazley can do what he's been saying he wants to do for his first 2 couple of years, he always talks in the post game interviews. He's like, I want to be the best defensive guy, just on any given night. He says he wants to be able to guard every position. So I think if Bazley can really do that and turn into an elite defender, which I have questions about now, but I do believe he will become a better defender. But I think if Bazley can do that, you have Dort, you have Scotty Barnes in this potential scenario, and then SGA with his potential on defense, I think that's a really, really good team for sure.
Yeah, Baze had a stretch there where he was being assigned the opposing team's best player. He's guarding guys like Luka and some other, you know, really, really high-level kind of jumbo guards, and he did a decent job. I think he's got a high upside on the defensive end as well, so that's a Really good point. We'll wrap up here with a couple of questions. Silver asks, what are we looking for with Poku in year two? What about Teo? I think for both Poku and Teo, it's fun watching rookies and just kind of seeing stats, right? When you're looking at two 19-year-old rookies that both are coming from overseas, which is a super hard transition in itself, especially during COVID. Like, these kids went from, you know, playing overseas to like moving to a different country in the middle of a pandemic. That's hard in itself. I think for them this season, more than anything, it was what kind of stats can they put up? What kind of things can we see from them to show that potential? Whereas year two, it's going to be more about how do those stats actually impact the game, impact winning? Because you look at Teo's stats, he had a ton of awesome games. He shot a bunch of threes, made a bunch of threes. It wasn't at the greatest clip, but it's still promising. Great, great passer. Had some really flashy passes, even from game one, from the preseason. He had some great passes, but he has a lot of turnovers. He had quite a few games where he put up a bunch of points, but may have not been the most efficient, and his on-court numbers just aren't great. Same with Poku. We saw him break a ton of rookie records. He's obviously 7 foot. He does a lot of things that most 7-footers don't do, but how much does that impact winning? I think for it was easy for us to, you know, the last 5-6 years, you look at the Detroit Pistons and you look at their statistics and you see a guy and it's like Luke Kennard, for example, maybe he averages 16 points a game and you're like, you know what? Luke Kennard might be really good. He's averaging 16 points a game. He's an awesome shooter. He's a 6'5 kind of combo guard. Great. He goes to the Clippers and he's been okay, right? Like obviously his role changes, fewer shots. It's like, it goes back to that empty stats. And it's easy to look at the Detroit Pistons of the world, the Sacramento Kings of the world, you know, the Knicks in the past, like, yeah, someone's got to score on that team. Someone's got to rebound. It's easy. Like how much stock can you put in those numbers? And I think it's the same for Oklahoma City this year. Like, it was great to see Poku and Teo put up those numbers, but I want to see that impact the game. Whether that's impacting winning, we'll see. We'll see if the Thunder are trying to win games next year or just trying to develop more. But I want to see their numbers actually make an impact rather than just having those raw numbers.
Right. I saw a chart earlier today that showed like defensive points added and offensive points added. And it was Teo who was practically
very last,
the very last
yeah.
for our team. So yeah, I agree with you with that. I think, I mean, obviously he's young. I think he's 18 or 19.
Yeah.
So I think as he grows as a player and just develops maturity, I think he'll improve in that area. But yeah, definitely this year, we had a lot of empty stats to be filled, especially with SGA, Dort, and Bazley missing so much time.
Yep.
So I think, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and same with Moses Brown. Like,
yeah.
I don't care who you are, going in and putting up the numbers he had last night in that 2020 game he had earlier in the season. Like, that's hard to do. I don't care if you're going and playing at the local YMCA in a 40-minute game. Like, that's hard to do. It's just a matter of consistency, because he had a few just outstanding games. And then there's games where you're like, oh, I forgot Moses Brown was playing. He finishes with like 6.6 rebounds, but nonetheless, he had a solid season. I think we had some good things from him as well. Going down to questions here, a couple more. Who's more valuable, Bazley or Jerome? Kind of a loaded question. I think valuable around the league still Bazley, just because he's a 6'9" long athletic guy that, in my opinion, should have been playing small forward his entire career, whereas the Thunder like to play him at the stretch 4/small ball 5. I think he's more of a small forward. I think with his ball handling and his shooting stroke, it hasn't gone in a bunch yet, but I think he's got the skills to be a solid small forward. Just because of his intangibles and his length, I think he's got more value than Ty. I also think that Ty Jerome's ceiling might be a high-level backup guard that shoots the three at a high rate and can play both point guard and shooting guard, which is not a bad thing. Like every team needs those kind of guys. But I still think Darius Bazley projects as a starter in this league, whether it's in Oklahoma City or whether it's somewhere else. So I would go with Bazley there. Clay Sally says, give us a first-round upset. Oh, this is really, really hard. Geez. As much as I want to say Mavs over Clippers, Clay Sally knows dang well that I'm not picking that one for a variety of reasons. I could not stand the Mavericks going over the Clippers. Give me Blazers over Nuggets. Nothing against the Nuggets. Nothing against the Nuggets at all. I know they've been awesome with Jamal and Murray out. I mean, Aaron Gordon's been pretty solid for them. He just kind of fits there. Jokic is an obvious MVP. But something about this team just feels like their ceiling was really lower without Murray. He obviously, for the most part, carried them throughout the playoffs last year. And I just wonder, in a 7-game series, can Jokic outlast the scoring of like a Damian Lillard, a CJ McCollum? Like, Jokic can be great, but Michael Porter Jr. has averaged like 25 points a game since Jamal Murray went down. Can he continue that in a playoff series? I don't know. And I just think, and Clay is spot on in the chat, luck might run out for Denver. I think he's right. Like, I just don't know if this team can sustain a 7-game series against a Blazers team that I think we all know has the offensive firepower to really upset somebody. In fact, I know all of us watched it happen in a playoff series just a couple. So we'll see what happens there. All right. I think that is everything. Appreciate you guys jumping on. We'll post this as a podcast here shortly. So if you guys want to go back and listen or share with your friends, feel free to do that. Thanks for jumping on. And we will be doing this every Monday and Wednesday along with our standard group pod. See you guys.